This is Wellness 101, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health, your home for common sense, science-based healthcare. Here's your host, Dr. TJ Williams.
And welcome to the show, everyone. Here we are on another lovely Sunday. And guess what? We are not talking about adrenal fatigue.
No.
It kind of dates the show, so if we play this, if you're listening to this out of order, we just finished a four-part series on the adrenal glands, but we're moving on to more exciting topics.
Well, I don't know if more exciting. Adrenal fatigue
equally exciting.
We're going to spend four parts on this one.
That's so true. That's true. This is just going to be a show. It's going to be so weird just having one show.
I know. Today we're talking about biohacking.
Biohacking. It's a term that's kind of been coined. You hack everything, right? Anybody can hack everything. We saw these, you know, shop hacking or whatever you called it, the grocery stores when they did like extreme couponing and people would buy $800 worth of food and they would have to get the store to give them money back for buying all that food because of their coupons. Yeah. So same concept, same type of thing. Things that you can do to help yourself be healthier and happier and more exciting and not so exhausted.
Well, and we got a lot of feedback from, as I know we talked a lot about on the last show, the fact that, you know, when you come to see us, we don't just give you, you know, the lifestyle changes. I mean, we can talk you through those, but that's not what you're paying us for.
You're not paying me to tell you what to eat.
Right. And so given the feedback, we thought, you know what, let's just do a show on this. I mean, let's really kind of put it out there. And so if you're thinking about going to, you know, one of these practitioners who's just going to kind of guide you, we'll just go ahead and give you that information. So
pretty simple.
You can have it for free.
Dun, dun, dun.
So
basically the whole concept of this biohacking or body hacking, whatever you want to call it, different people call it different things, is just making changes to your lifestyle that can improve you and your health.
Right. And your body's actually physiology, the biology that's going on.
Right. And your family. You know, we hear over and over again, we hear this concept out there of you are what you eat. Well, that's not entirely true. You're really not what you eat. You are what you absorb from what you eat, assimilate, and then get into your cells, actually use, and then get rid of. That's what you are. You are not just what you eat, right? If you eat a bunch of rocks, you're not going to digest those. You're not going to absorb those. You're not going to become a rock. It doesn't work like that, right? But if you eat a bunch of crappy food and sugar, guess what? If you just ate sugar and carbs all day, guess what you're going to do? You're going to
be happy in the short term, probably.
That is true. You will be happy in the short term.
That does sound kind of wonderful in the short
term. Touché.
But overall, long term, it will not be a good situation.
Right. What you're going to do is you're going to break down, absorb all that sugar. It's going to get into your blood. It's going to create all kinds of problems, and you're going to become diabetic. You're going to get the sugars. That's just what it is. I mean, nobody wants that sort of stuff. So it's about what we put in our body, what we put on our body, things that you put on your skin. 17 seconds later, it's in your blood. Right. So it's just so many things that we can do. And you don't have to just be, you know, drive yourself nuts and be total crazy person with this stuff. These are simple, easy things that you can do to move yourself in the right direction.
Right. To make yourself feel better and look better and your body function overall, you know, function better and just help your health along the way, you know, along your lifetime. So kind of set yourself up for healthy living.
Right. And so we're going to talk about a few things today that, I mean, you don't even have to implement all of them. You pick one or two of these things, implement that. I can promise you, you're going to feel better. You have to. Now, you may go through a couple of days, like one of the things that we're going to talk about is getting sugar out of your system. You may go through a day or two of the carb flu. I mean, it's just that when we stop eating all this crappy food, your body has to kind of reset itself and say, oh, I don't know what to do. And you have to deal with that. So there may be a day or two where you just don't feel the best, but in the long term, you're going to feel so much better.
Right, exactly.
So let's talk about the first one, So we got six or seven of these. I don't know exactly. We just wrote out a list here, and
eight,
we're just gonna
actually.
Okay, whatever.
We came up with.
We might get through six or seven. I don't. You know how we go on this show. We get a little long winded. Well, one of us does.
They can't see you point at me.
We will be quiet. Well, now they know that I pointed at you. So, haha, it worked. So one of the first things that we do, and we talk about this, you know, at the Institute of Natural Health, when you come, we may end up doing some testing on you. Well, there's lag time between when we see you and when we get the results of that test, and it can be, you know, as short as a few days, as long as a few weeks. And so people ask, well, what do I do in the meantime? And we print out things to give, and you know, this is just quick and easy. One of those things is an elimination diet. Okay, so what is an elimination diet? I had a hard time with that. So an elimination diet is just basically picking some things that we know really aren't good for human consumption and taking those things out of our diet completely. And we just get rid of them for a month or so and just see what happens. And miraculously, people are like, oh, wow, I feel so much better now that I don't eat, you know, 17 pounds of sugar every day and I don't, you know, eat a pound of cheese every day.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I mean, so of course, and anyone who has been into the clinic knows this. I mean, if you are struggling with food issues and, you know, and there are certain symptoms that come in, you'll get a food sensitivity test. And to me, that was, you know, completely life changing. And I wanted to know exactly, you know, what am I sensitive to? What can I eat? What can't I eat? You know, and just give it to me so I, you know what my rule book is, and then I will follow it. Well, I mean, for those of you who are not interested in coming in the clinic or are just wanting to say, okay, well, you know, I'm not really feeling bad, but I kind of like to try this myself, an elimination diet is a great way to do that because you can do it for free. And this is what used to be the only option. I mean, when you went into doctors, if they suspected food sensitivities, your only choice was to go through an elimination diet. So, I mean, we do know that it works. It's a little, you know.
It's ridiculously difficult to do, the process that goes on, because your foods that you eat that you're sensitive to, you maybe have a low sensitivity to this one and a low sensitivity to that one, and you eat them together and you have a higher sensitivity and you don't know which one's the problem. And then you have, you know, our meals are covered with spices that
you may be sensitive to.
And so, you know, we're not eating one ingredient or two or three ingredient meals. You put a spice on there, you've automatically gone up to, you know, especially if it's a spice blend, you could have gone up to 30 ingredients just sprinkling a little shaker of a spice blend on there.
Right, exactly. And I mean, and
it's impossible.
The issue is that so many of us, I mean, this is why food sensitivities have gotten to be, I mean, they are just, it's a complete epidemic at this point. I mean,
we have people call us from all over the country and even the world. We have patients outside of the U.S. They call us and say, hey, I've heard your podcast. I really want to do a food sensitivity test. How do I do that?
Yeah. No,
literally,
I mean,
that's where they want to start. They're just like, I want to do the food sensitivity. I have people come in for a consultation, sit down, they say, first thing, before we get started, I just want to make sure that I'm going to get a food sensitivity test.
Yeah. Which is awesome because, I mean, once you figure out what your food sensitivities are, if you are taking any oral supplements or anything, everything is going to end up working better.
That's right.
I mean, it does make sense. You know, and the other issue that we do run into with elimination diets is, you know, and from my own personal experience, when you are really sick and you end up having a ton of sensitivities, the elimination diet is really a hard thing to figure out because, you know, for me, like I eliminated, you know, say I eliminated corn for a month. Well, I'm still eating a bunch of other things that I'm sensitive to. So
if you have 90 other food sensitivities,
right? So I can then eliminate corn and be like, well, that didn't make any difference, so I must be fine with that. And so, but I wasn't fine with corn. It's just that corn was one of, 90 others. So it just, that's where an elimination diet gets tricky. But we know that there are some main culprits. And so if you can get rid of those.
Right. And if you're just going to eliminate one thing, don't bother. I'll just be honest with you. Don't bother. You're wasting your time. If all you're going to do is get gluten out of your diet, are you just sensitive to gluten?
Right, but gluten is hard on your digestive system.
It's extremely hard on your digestive system.
Get rid of gluten.
But so is dairy. So if you're going to eliminate gluten, you might as well eliminate dairy as well. And if you're going to eliminate gluten and dairy, you might as well get rid of corn and peanuts. Those are your four major sensitivities and problems. And soy. I said soy and peanuts.
Oh, I thought you said corn and peanuts.
Oh, maybe I did say corn and peanuts and soy. It was on the tip of my tongue.
So, yeah, that's gluten, right. Soy, dairy,
I pointed at her earlier. She gets us off track. I don't know.
Yeah. But, I mean, we say, you know, eliminate these things. It's not easy to do. It's not. And you can start with one. And then once you get that, you know, because it is for people who are not used to like eliminating gluten, it is a change. The same thing with dairy.
It's hard to find out where gluten is and know all the names of it. Like modified food starch. That's gluten.
Yeah. Caramel coloring.
Caramel coloring. That's gluten. I mean, there are so many things that are gluten that it's hard if you're going to eliminate that. If the package doesn't say gluten free, it has gluten in it. If you're buying a packaged food, now, you know, things like meat just from the meat counter and vegetables that are sitting out with a cucumber with a bunch of cucumbers.
Meat, if it's any sort of processed meat, you know, if it's likely got bratwurst or a hot dog or something, it probably has gluten in it unless it says it's gluten-free.
Right, exactly. So those are big ones. I mean, most humans are sensitive to the proteins in milk, casein, and whey. And if you're not sensitive to both, you're sensitive to one. And so if you're sensitive to one of them, then that eliminates all the dairy from you. So, I mean, doing the elimination diet is difficult, but can be very rewarding.
Right, exactly. And if you can stick with it, that's some way that an easy way for, well, okay, it's not an easy way, but it is a way for you to biohack yourself and make sure that you are living healthier.
And we know that it works because people will say, you know what, I'm going to eliminate gluten, and they don't eat gluten for a month, and then they go out and have pasta with their friends or their family, and then they tell us, oh my gosh, I felt like I got hit by a truck.
Yep.
Like, well, guess what? And they're like, oh, I know, I'm not eating gluten ever again. This was just terrible. And so that's the sort of stuff that happens. So we've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue on with our different eight ways. She's pointing at me and raising her hand and fists and saying eight. She's very angry with me, I can tell. Our ways to biohack yourself to improve your health and your life. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are having another exciting episode here of Wellness 101 talking about biohacking. It's so exciting. We just talked about elimination diets. Everybody loves them. It's very difficult to do, but can be very beneficial. Getting rid of things out of your diet like gluten or dairy or soy can have profound positive impacts on us. We don't really realize how much damage these foods do to us, especially if we have a sensitivity. Gluten is going to be creating problems for you regardless of whether you have a sensitivity or not. There's some physiological things that take place.
That's why I said even problem. If you don't eliminate other things, gluten is still a good thing to eliminate.
Yeah, because it's terrible for you.
But speaking of things that are difficult to do but will have, you know, a big impact on your health is eliminating sugar.
More addictive than cocaine.
Yep.
Lights up the brain, same spots.
Yeah.
Very difficult to kick.
Yeah, and we also see this because a lot of people get really angry when they hear you say that would be helpful if they eliminate sugar. I mean, like, if you have that reaction, like, I mean, I would not be surprised.
You have a sugar problem.
Yeah, if there are people who turn us off when we say, you know, eliminate sugar, they'll just be like, they're crazy.
Right.
Because that is easier, assuming we're crazy is easier than having to actually look at the fact that maybe you're eating too much sugar.
The first step is admitting that you have a problem.
Exactly.
That's true. If you consider yourself a sugartarian, you have a problem.
Yeah.
Right. So getting rid of that is just, it's extremely hard. We know that it's difficult, but it's difficult because when you've changed there's physiological things that go on, and I'll get up on a little pedestal here. What happens is You actually, the human body, the cells of the human body are actually meant to burn fat as fuel. That's what we're meant to burn. We have carnitine that carries the fat into the cell to burn it as fuel. That's what we're supposed to do. We burn it slow, we burn it low, and it creates massive amounts of energy. But when we're stressed and we eat sugar and we flip our cellular system over to burning sugar, basically what happens is a whole cascade of physiological responses. That when we crave that sugar, we eat that sugar, then our insulin spikes, and then it falls very rapidly. We get super tired. We get very grouchy when our blood sugar fluctuates. And then what do? To feed that beast again? We put more sugar in our system somehow, some way. We either grab a soda or a candy bar, and we put that sugar in our system to spike that sugar back up, and then less than an hour later, it crashes back down, and we're grouchy again. I mean, you all out there that work in America, you know that there's people that you just have to be, you have to tiptoe around, because you never know if they're going to be really, really grouchy or if they're going to be normal and sane to you. Maybe they're grouchy because they're in the middle of a sugar crash or they're in the middle of a sugar spike. One or the other can be going on. And when we switch ourselves to sugar burning, it puts stress on our body. We have this, well, I just mentioned carnitine, that's a conditionally essential amino acid that is, it's what helps carry fat into the cell, and it's conditionally essential. If we're switched over into sugar burning, we don't have enough carnitine in our system to actually carry the fat into fuel. So now we become dependent upon that sugar as our fuel source. Our brain loves it, and our body loves it and makes us feel good for a short period of time, and then it makes us feel really bad, and we do it again. This is the exact same roller coaster that addicts go through with cocaine and heroin and things like this. They feel really good for a short period of time, then they come crashing down, and they reach for that high again, and they go right back up, and they feel really good for a short period of time, and they come crashing down. Well, all the while that's switched you over, without enough carnitine, you're not going to switch yourself back, right? So there are key pieces to this, and we can't just take a carnitine supplement because now we've messed up our digestive system because we're eating gluten and dairy and just junk and we don't absorb anything. And so we have to figure out a way to get this stuff into our system somehow, some way. We use IVs to deliver it, but other ways, you know, other people use different things to get this stuff into your system. But all the while, your whole system has switched and become dependent on a different fuel source. And it's extremely difficult to get you back over to this fat burning
yes
that you're supposed to go through. So I got on a little tirade there. I hope you took notes.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just, I mean, we think of, you know, sugary, you know, like candy and soft drinks and things like that.
And powdered sugar.
Right.
Candy, and, you know, cane sugar.
Actual sugar. But it's also true. I mean, a lot of people out there are, you know, eating like just tons of bread and pasta. You're like, it's the same thing. You're going through, I mean, that's all sugar to your body. And so a lot of people out there will be like, you know, well, I don't eat that many sweets. But if you're
right, eating, but they eat six cartons of yogurt a day.
Right.
Which is just, I mean, especially flavored yogurt.
Right.
Oh, it's terrible.
Or they eat cereal
now you're eating
for breakfast.
Sugar and dairy.
They eat sugar, you know, they eat cereal for breakfast. They have a sandwich for lunch.
Or salad.
On bread. Yeah. And then they have pasta for dinner. I mean, that's all sugar. It's all sugar.
We had no protein for the day.
Right.
It cracks me up. I talk to people about how much protein they actually need, and their eyes get great big, like, oh my gosh, I can't eat that much protein. I'm like, you're right. Tomorrow, you can't eat that much protein, but if you don't get yourself to eating more protein than what you're eating now, you're going to have serious health problems, much more serious than what you're coming in to see me for right now.
And a lot of people who are on these, you know, sugar kicks, whether it's through, you know, carbs like bread and cereal or through actual sugar, are not getting enough fat either. I mean, a lot of times they are not, you know, I mean, they're
sugar and salt.
Yeah, that's what they're surviving off of. And I think we all know deep down, you know, whether we know a lot about physiology or not, we all know that's not a good thing.
Right. And we didn't even talk about how sugar leads to our body becoming more and more inflamed. I mean,
yes,
that's a hot topic in health right now. Everybody's talking about inflammation. I mean, it's something we've been talking about for decades. I don't know why the modern medicine is just finally starting to barely catch up a little bit, that maybe inflammation is not really good for you. And maybe the ways that they measure it isn't really the best either, but that's neither here nor there. But when you consume sugar, you're literally, the analogy I tell people is you're basically throwing dry leaves on a fire. That's what you're doing. You're setting yourself up to be more inflamed, burn hotter, faster right now.
Right. And setting yourself up for a lot of other conditions. So if you can kick sugar, you know, out of your diet or, you know, greatly reduce it, you'll see huge results. So that's something that you can do at home that will help your health without having to seek out a practitioner.
Yes.
Next one.
Change when you eat. So many people are in this very specific routine of get up, do this, do that, do something else, go through the day, come home, go to bed, repeat. They eat at the same time. They eat the same foods. They eat the same, you know, it's, I mean, I don't know how many people tell me that, I mean, we look at their food log of what they're eating. They're eating the same thing for breakfast and the same thing for lunch, and dinner is the only variable thing that they have. And that's just not enough. And, you know, there's this concept out there called intermittent fasting. So that is basically you wake up and you don't have breakfast, you don't really have lunch, and you eat something mid to late afternoon as your first meal of the day. There is a lot of research going on out there now about the benefits, the health benefits of intermittent fasting. I intermittent fast. I do it on a fairly regular basis. There are, you know, 3-4 days a week that I don't eat anything for breakfast. Now I have to, I'm eating by lunch because I'm starving by lunch, but I don't always eat breakfast. And I mean, I don't have an issue with blood sugar. I don't have an issue with being, you know, just exhausted. I also take a nap when I'm tired. And a lot of people don't do that, but there are these hormones in your system, there's one in particular called ghrelin. There's another one that's leptin. So ghrelin is the hormone that makes your stomach growl. That tells you that you're hungry. And leptin is this hormone that tells you when you're full. And a lot of people underproduce leptin and overproduce ghrelin. And so by intermittent fasting, you can start balancing these two things out. I mean, we test leptin levels on people who, you know, we believe have an issue with this. And you'd be amazed at the number of people that have super low levels of leptin. No wonder they eat and eat and eat and eat, because their body is not telling them, hey, you're full.
Right.
Well, and this is why, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but this is why eating slowly helps too, because, you know, leptin is released when your stomach reaches a critical point and it just says, oh, okay, now you're full. This is what full feels like. And then you start releasing this hormone that tells your brain and your rest of your body, oh, I'm full. I can stop eating. Well, if you eat super, super fast, you blow right through that point. The hormones can't catch up. You continue to eat. And now you've overeaten. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No. And I just wanted to say, I mean, each of the things that we're throwing out here, I mean, take what, you know, you think is doable and what you want to try. You don't have to do everything. I say that because intermittent fasting, there are some of you who are going to hear this and think, totally doable. You know, hey, I can do that. I mean, right. I'm kind of doing that already. I don't eat breakfast. And then I, you know, I'm not really hungry until lunch. And then, you know, I tend to eat as soon as I get home and then I'm fine. You know, I mean, like you're already kind of doing it. There will be other people that are more like me who are like, are you kidding me? Like, there is no way I could go more than a few hours. And
God help the fool that gets in her way.
I say, and no one will want to be around me. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, you're going to know yourself a little bit.
Exactly.
And if you do choose to do some intermittent fasting, it's extremely important. If you're one of these people that wakes up, eats cereal, and then has a salad at lunch, and you decide, oh, I'm going to do intermittent fasting, and I'm not going to eat breakfast. If you just eat salad, if you continue to eat the same way, you're going to probably gain more weight because now you've stressed the system and then you didn't feed it what it needed. If you're going to intermittent fast, that meal that you consume to break that fast needs to be heavy in fat and heavy in protein. And if you're going to have vegetables with it, they need to be good, healthy vegetables that are healthy for you. And you find that out with food sensitivity testing.
Yes.
Okay, moving right along. What's our next one?
Yes.
Sleep. So sleep. We are so sleep deprived in this country. It's not even funny. I mean, people go to bed, but don't sleep. They toss, they turn, they tell me I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and then I'm wide awake and I don't go back to sleep until 5. If that's going on with you, you need to go back and listen to our 4-part adrenal fatigue series because you probably have a problem with cortisol.
Yeah.
There's another issue at play here.
Either that or you have bad habits, because I have to say, I mean, there are two things. I mean, it's one thing to be where your body isn't letting you fall asleep. it's another that you turn on the TV where, you know, watch mindless television that just ends up keeping you up at night instead of going to bed.
Right.
So there are two, you know, those are two separate things that could be going on. And I know we want to talk more about sleep, but I do think that we need to take a break.
We got to take a break. We're getting the big signal here to take a little break. So when we come back, we're going to continue on with our biohacking. You're listening to Wellness 101.
This is Wellness 101.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. TJ. With me is Aaron. We are talking today about biohacking, things that you can do on your own that can help improve your health and quality of life, quantity of life, all kinds of stuff. They just make you feel better, be better, look better, talk better. I don't know. Everything else that you can do better. Whatever you can do, do it better.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and we were talking about sleep and...
Sleep, that's right.
Yeah, and just kind of...
Get us back on track.
Right. Kind of close us out. I mean, I know we hear this all the time, and we all know that we should be getting, you know, plenty of sleep, but it really is important. I think we've probably talked about this on the show before. You know, if you're not getting enough sleep, you're putting yourself at risk for a lot of other health problems.
Right.
You know, definitely a higher risk for chronic disease, but I mean, you'll have a weakened immune system. You're at risk of depression. You'll have trouble concentrating and, you know, an irritability, increased appetite, and your
those hormones are going to go out of whack.
Yeah.
And that's going
to
be bad.
Leads to more problems. So it really is important, you know, that it's got to be put high on the priority list. And that's an easy way, you know, an easier way to biohack your life.
Right. Right. So now we're going to move on to one that it's one of my favorite.
All right.
Eating fat.
Yes.
And lots of it. I like fat. I eat lots of fat. It's delicious.
Anyone who has seen Dr. TJ will probably find that kind of funny. Because
they're making fun of my physique, ladies
and
gentlemen.
He's 6'4 and about 100 pounds.
Oh. Maybe it's because I eat lots of fat.
Maybe so. Right.
Maybe everyone else should try it. Yeah, I'm tall and skinny. I embrace it and I'm okay with it. So eating lots of fat, it's a great way to give your body the sense of fullness. I mean, so many people eat meals and then an hour later they're in the kitchen rummaging around for something because they're starving again. I can pretty much guarantee you, if that's the case and that's explaining you didn't get enough fat at the meal that you just ate. We need lots more fat than what this pitiful dietary recommendation thing is. That's just not how the human body works.
Fat keeps you full. I mean, it helps to fill you up. And I see this a lot with, you know, with friends of mine and a lot of other women who, you know, are especially like at lunchtime, you know, in the office are barely eating anything. And then they are, you know, craving things around like 2:30, 3 o'clock. And of course you are, because you're, you know, like the little salad you had or the, you know, 100 or 200 calorie smart ones that you just ate is not going to do it.
Right, right. All it's going to do is make you want another one.
Right.
And another one. Next thing you know, your whole box of your smart ones is gone in a day. You're like, what just happened?
Right.
I ate the whole box.
That's not supposed to be good for you.
Wait, is that what you're saying?
I think a lot of people, like growing up, you know, when I was a lot younger, it was cut all these calories, cut all these calories,
yes,
cut all this fat.
Right.
And now things are showing up differently. And so it's like you were saying, a lot of women will sit there and they'll be like, well, I'll just have a salad.
Yes.
It's going to be fine. And a lot of men do that too.
Right.
They're like, I'll just have a salad and then I'll be fine. But what newer research seems to be showing is more of like the early 2000 craze, like the Atkins stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's better.
Go ahead and eat that bacon.
Yeah.
Right.
Just don't
exactly.
Put some bread with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I'm a fan of.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Don't blame the bacon for what the biscuit did. That's exactly That's exactly right. I mean,
but a lot of us, like Liz said, that grew up in the low-fat craze, seem so counterintuitive.
Yeah, and I mean, if you grew up in the low-fat craze, the likelihood is, this is what led to, if you look when that thing came in and then the rate of obesity that took place in this country, 70% of the United States is obese, overweight or obese. I said obese, I mean overweight or obese. I mean, most of the people that were in that low-fat craze. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, we took out the fat and then we put in sugar to keep the taste, and addicted to sugar.
If you remove the fat from a food, you remove the flavor from the food. Fat equals flavor. If you take that out, the only way that you can make that not taste like cardboard is to put piles of sugar in it. And nobody paid any attention to the sugar.
No, because we didn't think, no. I mean, we were told sugar's not the problem. Fat's the problem. Right. Fat is making you fat.
Right.
And so we all, took the fat out. Right. And then not only did, not eating the fat, our body needs fat.
Right.
But then also we become addicted to sugar. And so it's so much harder now to try to fix all of those problems.
And when you're addicted to sugar, tell them what they win. They win diabetes and being overweight and spending more money on health care.
Right. All sorts of chronic health problems because it
heart
leads
disease.
To inflammation, and inflammation leads to health problems.
I don't like that prize.
Yeah.
I want a different one.
It's a bad prize. So, things like the ketogenic diet, it's not for everyone, but boy, is it much better than, this no-fat diet. I mean, it's just hard on a system.
And you don't necessarily have to go, to the extreme. I mean, keto is great, and if you can do it, there are so many health benefits, but not everyone is going to be able to do that. You can still add fat into your diet.
And it's not healthy for everyone, because some people can have some genetic things that are going on that actually means that they shouldn't eat super high levels of fat like that. But for most of us out there, a good 60% of the population, at least, that's just the genetics talking here, that you should be perfectly fine eating a higher fat diet.
Now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, this is getting things like, wild caught fish. You're not going to eat a lot of protein if you're doing a ketogenic diet. And what protein you are, it's going to be, bison, wild caught fish, but you're going to be getting a lot of your calories rather from things like coconut oil and ghee and nuts and non-starchy vegetables. Those are things that are okay to eat. We've just got to get your system ready for that. This is not something you just jump right into.
Right. And it does also depend on what your food sensitivities are. And I know we've talked on here before that if you've got lower sensitivities to things, you can end up, if you don't eat them for a while, then you can be fine. But if you take a food sensitivity test and you find out that your highest sensitivities are all things that are higher in fat and that you would need to be, on a strict ketogenic diet, it may be better to hold off on that, take those things out of your diet, get rid of the sensitivities, and then you can move on to a keto diet.
Right. I think you said keto giant there. I'm just like, what's a keto giant? I like
you
it.
You knew what I meant.
It's a ketogenic diet, abbreviated.
Yes. I liked it. I liked it a lot. So, it's a ketogenic diet. Most people, if you're following that, you're getting, 70 to 80% of your calories from fat. And then the remaining 20 to 30% is coming from protein, and then just a little bit from carbohydrates. You're very carbohydrate restricted on that diet. So it's something that you just, it's not for everyone, but boy, can it sure help a lot of conditions and a lot of people.
Yeah. Next.
So meditation. Meditation is another one. It's completely free. Meditation is a practice. You have to practice meditation. You're not going to be good at it the very first time you do it. You're probably going to be terrible at it. I know that I was.
Right. And then you're going to think, I can't do this.
This is stupid. There's no possible way.
Right.
Hang in there.
Yes.
There's something to be said. There's a lot of research out there that meditation is extremely helpful and healthful for our bodies. It's a very healthy thing for us to do.
Right. Especially in this day and age when we know that we're under so much stress.
Right.
And there is research showing that this can really help how we're processing, how we're dealing with stress and to lower the stress in our lives.
Right. It helps our body decrease its level of inflammation. And we're all inflamed. Everybody's inflamed. Very rarely do we test people and we not find some sort of inflammation somewhere going on in their body. So it's an easy way to decrease inflammation. It helps sleep. And that's something that so many people need. I mean, it's one of our things is to get better sleep. I mean, if you have stress and anxiety, meditation can be critical to your health and well-being. And I don't recommend people just go out and just try to sit silently and meditate. I highly encourage people to, you know, find an app, find somebody somewhere, something out there that does guided meditations.
It makes it easier to get into it.
Yeah, having someone talk to you and guide you through what to do and the next steps, it makes it easier for you to transition to doing it yourself.
Right, and there are so many places that you can get guided meditations for free. And meditation is one of those things that, I mean, it helps, you know, you mentally, emotionally, physically, I mean, all of these things, and it's free. I mean, so it's one of the things that it's kind of crazy that more people aren't doing it, because we know what the benefits are and there isn't a cost. So all of these people out there who are like, well, I just don't know what'll help. Like, if you haven't tried meditation, I'm not saying it's going to cure you of everything that you have, but it will make a difference. It's that powerful.
Right. Yeah, it's really cool. I pay attention. For those of you who don't know, I like Oprah, and I watch her shows, her Super Soul Sunday and stuff like that. I really like that type of show. Not all of them. Some of her guests, I'm like, oh, whatever. But I really like some of that stuff. Well, she partnered up with Deepak Chopra quite a while ago, and they do guided meditations, and they release these, and they're free. They're free for about a month. It's about a month's worth of
21 days.
21 days.
And every once in a while, like every, I don't know what it is, 4 to 6 months or something, they'll do, you know, a 21-day meditation where you get them for free.
They're great. All you have to do is get, I mean, she has an app. I forget what the name of the app is. It's a little purple thing with a lotus flower on it. I look at it on my phone. I know what it looks like. I don't know what it's called. But if you look for Oprah guided meditation with Deepak Chopra, it'll come up. And yeah, it's a couple times a year, maybe three times a year they come out, and they're amazing. And that's a great way to get into guided meditations. It's a, like Aaron just said, it's a 21-day thing. It's an easy habit to get into, and something that's really beneficial. And you go through those 21 days, and by the end of it, you basically have it.
Yeah. Well, and it's only like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And so that's good. I mean, and they kind of, you know, they guide you through it. And I mean, of course you can then purchase, you know, their guided meditations. Like, they have all sorts of packages, but it's when they do it for free, it's a good way to try it. So
yeah, I highly encourage it. I really enjoy doing those. I wouldn't recommend putting it on your phone and then listening to it while you're going to work, while you're driving to work. This is something that you want to sit quietly and do it home. Because we don't need
traffic
you zoning out.
Is not going to help this whole meditation process.
Right. That may be the time that you need meditation, because you're driving in rush hour traffic.
It's
but
not the time to do it.
No.
It's not the time. It's not the time. All right. We've got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to finish up with our biohacking with a couple of more tips. You're listening to Wellness 101.
Is Wellness 101.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are in our last segment. Wow, this show has went quickly. So today we're talking about some tips to biohack your life and make yourself healthier, basically at no charge. I mean, it's just easy things that you can do to improve your health and well-being.
Right.
So we've listed off several. We've got a couple more to go. One of them is grounding. Basically, kick off your shoes and walk around on the earth barefoot. There is something to be said for getting back in touch with nature. I mean, most of the population out there, we live in the concrete jungle. We wear shoes all the time. We don't set foot on grass unless it's an accident. The time that we step on grass living in the city is usually barefoot, and we're cutting across the the little, what do you call those little things in a parking lot where they've got a few bushes and some and everybody walks through it because nobody wants to walk all the way around? The median thing. Yeah. Had trouble with median, ladies and gentlemen. Median. Yeah, that's about the only time that people living in the city actually get onto grass. We don't walk barefoot on the grass anymore. I mean, I remember as a little kid growing up walking in the grass barefoot. I did grow up in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And that was common practice, but that's just not something that we do. So,
right. And this, I mean, like, so grounding is also known as earthing, but it means your feet are connecting with the surface below you, and that actually brings some powerful energy with it.
Yeah, energetically. So kind of stepping out of mainstream Western medicine into more Eastern stuff, there's a acupuncture point on the bottom of your foot called kidney one, and that's how we bring energy into the system. And so by walking barefoot on the ground, the theory is that the idea is that you are receiving energy from the ground by doing that and bringing that good stuff up into you. There's actually books on it. I think there's a book titled Earthing, that where they talk about this sort of stuff. It's really, really cool stuff.
Yeah. It can improve sleep.
Yes.
It's been shown
decreases stress.
Yeah. Reducing inflammation. I mean, so there are some actual, you know, powerful, benefits to this.
And by doing it, if you do that on a sunny day, you're getting sunshine, which is very exciting because most of us don't get sunshine either.
Right.
We go to work before the sun comes up and we come home after the sun goes down.
Vitamin D.
Vitamin D. Absolutely. We got to have that. We got to have that sunshine. So another way to do it is if you're at the beach, walking on the beach is a great thing to do. You know, if you have a yard, walking across your grass, barefoot to get to the mailbox to get your mail is a good thing to do. It's best if you spend some time doing it. It's not like, you know, okay, let's go as quick as we can and come back as fast as we can. You got to spend some time out there. Do a few minutes each day, of doing it. Great thing to do. Another one is just get up and move. Were you done with earthing?
Yeah.
Okay. Another one was just, she was looking at me. I thought she had something more exciting. She was like, nope, you need to hurry up because this show is almost over. So the last one is just basically get up, move around. We spend so much time sitting, and sitting leads to just, you know, horrible, horrible health. Our posture suffers. We sit way too much in this country.
Yeah. We sit all day at work. A lot of us sit in our car to get to work, then sit at work, then sit in our car to go home, and then sit in front of the TV.
Yep.
I mean, how many people does that describe your life?
Right. And if we go up and down two flights.
Do you have a camera planted on? How did you know?
That's exactly right. It's it. I mean, if we go up and down two flights of stairs, we're winded. I mean, that's pitiful.
Right.
You do have a camera on.
That's exactly right. So.
But even, I mean, this is why, you know, standing desks have become more popular.
Yeah.
I mean, just actually, you know.
We see walking desks. A guy I know, he has a walking desk.
Yeah, which is a little too advanced for me.
Yeah,
that's called a smartphone.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of ways that you can do this. You don't want to go overboard. You don't want to go crazy. That's...
Yeah, I mean, just to be more cognizant of it, even, you know, after dinner, make it a habit to, you know,
get up and walk around.
Get up and walk around, and that helps your digestion a lot, too.
That's exactly right.
So it, you know, double benefit. Or go for a short walk after you eat. Or, you know, just something where you don't have, you know, because we all get into daily habits, and then that's what we ended up doing. And if that involves sitting, then here we are spending most of our life sitting, and there are a lot of health issues that come along with that.
Right, right. So I want to recap just a little bit about what we talked about. We have just a few minutes left. So the things that we talked about today, elimination diet, you want to make sure and, you know, if you're going to do this, figure out some things and just get rid of them, eliminate them for 30 days and see how you feel. Most people feel great when they start getting rid of things like gluten, dairy, soy. It's a little scary when you think about it, but it's doable. Everyone can manage. Another one was getting rid of sugar. Sugar is extremely addictive and very inflammatory. It's not very good for our systems. So if we can get rid of sugar, that's a great thing to do. Change when you eat. We talked about intermittent fasting. If you're going to do intermittent fasting, definitely remember that you need to break that fast with protein and fat, not just, you know, a salad or sugar or something like that. That's what we got to do. Sleeping more, making sure that you're getting plenty of rest. Get a nighttime routine, go to sleep at the same time, wake up at the same time, get quality rest. When you're tired on the weekend, take yourself a little nap. There's nothing wrong with that. Just try not to, you know, cuddle up in bed and sleep for hours.
Doctor's orders.
Exactly. Eat fat, a lot of fat. If you've heard of the ketogenic diet, look into it more. It may be a thing for you. Good fats, lots of good fats, healthy things, coconut oil, olive oil, ghee. Those things are delicious, nutritious, good for us. Meditate. Get into meditation. We're big fans. Guided meditations, if you're new to it, a guided meditation can be very, very beneficial to, you know, walking you into the practice of meditation. Get out and kick off your shoes, like we just said. Earthing, walking barefoot on the earth is very therapeutic. It lowers stress levels, brings energy into the system. And then just get off your keister. Move more. We just don't move enough. You shouldn't be taking this stuff overboard. You shouldn't be, you know, documenting every single thing that you eat. Shouldn't be fasting for days. We're not supposed to be, you know, just going completely neurotic with our behavior. But just some of these simple hacks can make a huge difference in your life.
And if you're trying some of these and you don't see a difference, you know, that's the time to actually go and see a practitioner and find someone who can help you out with it.
But because you may have an underlying thing that is creating a problem, that these hacks really, you've got to fix this other issue before these things can be of benefit to you.
Right.
So that's about all the time we have. Another exciting show. You can find out more information on our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. You can email us. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram. By all means, send us an email if you have any questions. We're happy to answer those. You can call us, 314-293-8123. We love to hear your calls and your messages. So that's about all we've got. So for Aaron, I'm Dr. TJ. This has been Wellness 101. Thanks for listening.